And welcome to Weather and Ag in Focus on this finally Friday, February 7th. A week away from all the foolish guys getting engaged. I heard Addison was on the hook for that. Addison, is that just a rumor?
You sound like unsubstantiated rumors.
Okay, all right, just checking. I'm Chief Meteorologist Dean Wysocki along with our Ag Director Bridget Riedel. And, well, Bridget, we got a little snow, a lot of wind yesterday. I was just got back from Barnesville, was out at a co-op giving a talk out there about the LRC. And boy, oh boy, just driving out there, you could see the topsoil erosion in the drifting of the snow. Just absolutely incredible.
Well, with some of those sustained winds we've been having, not terribly surprising. And we've had some guests recently. If you remember, Craig LaPlante was in just within the last 2 weeks, and he talked about the dollar value attributed to that when we see those soils blow. Normally, we have a lot more snow cover. And so we would not necessarily have the situation we're currently in, but whew, when you don't have snow cover, and again, what did we have yesterday, 30, 35 mile an hour winds?
Oh, no, they were up to almost just under 50, 45 plus. Yeah, it was.
So, yeah, that would have been rough.
Once we get a decent snow, 3-4 inches, but then the wind blows it all off. So, but there is more snow in the forecast. In fact, winter weather advisories are in effect right now, south of the 94 corridor. Some indication that those may be lifted a county north to include areas from Fargo, possibly out to Jamestown. We'll wait and see how that pans out, though. Right now, there's a little light snow on radar currently from Ellendale towards Oaks. Some of that not reaching the ground, but the stuff around Ellendale, little enhancement on radar. So it does appear that is reaching the ground. Some of it's grapple as well as the atmosphere saturates at the lower levels. So we're going to start seeing a little bit of that light snow developing this afternoon, mainly in the far southern valley. But again, that's moving northward, and we'll continue to see the snow chances increase overnight tonight, again, mainly along and south of 94. So we're looking at that coming to an end by 6 tomorrow morning. Now, total snowfall right along the 94 corridor, probably 2 to 3 inches. Some spots might get a touch more than that, maybe up to 4, but I think that's going to be pushing it. Areas just north of the 94 corridor, not much at all. I mean, there's a sharp cutoff in this snow. While you go south of the 94 corridor where the winter weather advisories are in effect, they could see 4 to 6 inches of snow down in the far southern part of the state, stretching over into southern lakes country, let's say Alex, southward from there. So, again, we're looking at another snow event. Now, the good news with this is this snow won't have the strong, strong winds that we had with the last system. Now, if you're going down into South Dakota, the winds are going to be stronger down there. So you might run into a little more travel trouble down into South Dakota. But for our area, tomorrow, probably north at about 10 to 20. So, again, far cry from what we had yesterday. So hopefully we can get some of that snow to settle onto the fields without blowing off. And then the weekend is quiet with temperatures in the teens. But next week, we've got a shot of Arctic air and dangerously cold air coming in early next week with wind chills between 30 and 45 below to start off next week. So keep that in the back of your mind. If you're doing any traveling tonight, once again, winter weather advisories to the south of the 94 corridor. Those may be extended northward. As we head into the afternoon, our latest models are trying to move that just a little bit north, not by much, only by like 20 miles, but that could make a difference and make conditions a little worse along that 94 corridor.
So once again, be careful out there. And as folks are seeing changing weather conditions, you can certainly let us know. We would be curious to see what's happening. If you talk about South Dakota, we all know about the legend of Summit and how it's never great there. I swear it's been an absolute snowstorm in July. So keep your eyes peeled. If you're heading down I-29, you're going to be in the Summit, South Dakota region. And today's weather brought to you by Ryan Bonesack with Equitable Agri Finance. They provide long-term fixed rates for farmland financing. Here to help you as a farmer and a rancher. Please give Ryan a call at 701-261-6529. He would be happy to work with you and especially going into this 2025 production year. Well, it's the Super Bowl weekend.
It is.
Have you bought your groceries?
I'm good to go. I'm good to go with all the snacks and everything. Okay. There doesn't seem to be a lot of it. I think everybody's the Chiefs again, but I'll tell you, this is going to be a great game, two great teams. So I think this is going to be a real tight game. I wish they'd do one thing, either move the Super Bowl to Saturday. That would be ideal, or have it earlier on Sunday. It's just it's work production next Monday is probably not going to be good for a lot of people.
Well, let Roger Goodell know what needs to be done to upgrade with the NFL, but I'm pretty sure all the advertising and channels are going to say, sure,
yeah,
whatever.
Right,
but
exactly.
Nonetheless, Super Bowl pricing on foods. We're worrying about that because there aren't exactly a lot of us going to the game. And I found this fairly interesting. The percent change on foods that went down this year versus last year occurred. So you're going to pay less for things like celery, broccoli, cauliflower. I guess the vegetables are going to be a little bit less. Actually, potato chips, because there has been more potato production and a better supply. Potato chips are easier to find. Shrimp and frozen pizza, as well as salsa and tortilla chips. Those prices have dropped anywhere from 8 to 1%. What has gone up? Surprisingly, onion-flavored dip. Some of you must be real fans of French onion.
Wow.
Then also the price of beer, prepared carrots, because who wants to peel and cut carrots? We're just buying it by the bag now. chicken wings, avocados, and cherry tomatoes. So interesting enough, now when it comes to beef, we definitely have seen prices remain elevated. And it's not that we have a poor supply of beef. We do know that it's somewhat tight. But those dynamics right now, whether it's exporting less, importing a little more, or putting more pounds on the animal, we have a decent supply of beef, but the price is still up about 4% as a category from a year ago. And consumers still buying, still liking their beef and wanting to make sure that they have enough.
What about cocktail weenies? Those are always, you know, it's either chicken wings, cocktail weenies, or pizza, it seems like.
I think because those are what you would call a combination food, what's really in that.
Okay.
Not on the chart, surprisingly.
What's your go-to? What's your favorite?
I'm a good eater. I can't really say that.
Doesn't
there's
matter, right?
One category.
I love a good wing. Really. I love a good wing with a spicy sauce on it. Can't beat it.
It's kind of whatever you need to have happen. And don't forget all of those dairy products. That just means you get more of your milk. So actually for the dairy category, this is a great weekend because you're all looking for more cheese on your pizza, cheese-based snacks, sour cream, topping a lot of things, blue cheeses or homemade ranches. So there's a lot of dairy products being consumed too, which, interesting enough, only 16% of adults in the U.S. drink milk regularly. I thought that number would be higher, but it's only 16%.
Wow.
So I did too. As far as children from ages 2 to 19, 44% of children. So once we get older, I guess we decide that we don't need as much calcium in our life, or we make the leap to taking it in by yogurts, cheeses, and so many other things. It's probably a bit of the case right there.
Yeah, no doubt.
So yeah, so I don't forget other ways that that agriculture plays in the game, the turf on the ground. The football is actually made of cowhide, not a pigskin. I always find it interesting that we call it the pigskin, and I think at one time it was from hogs, but now it's pretty much, you know, all cows invested in the Super Bowl. So, I've had a fan already say, go Eagles. I don't have a dog in this hunt, so whatever happens, yay. We'll see how it turns out.
See, I've got Eagle fan friends, and I've also got a lot of Chiefs fans. So, yeah, it's a. And Bridget, we just got an update. Just like I was talking about, have a funny feeling that the winter weather advisory would be kind of pushed about a county north, so they have just included the 94 corridor. That does include the Fargo-Moorhead area. So they just put us under a winter weather advisory for late this afternoon through Saturday morning. So plan accordingly if you're doing any traveling. So, yeah.
Absolutely.
Yeah, about 2 to 5 inches of snow is expected. So, well, yeah, like I said, we need the moisture. We need the snow. And talking to the co-op guys out there today, they were pretty intrigued by how the LRC works. They wanted to know kind of like what the spring was going to hold and all that good stuff. So want to if they're listening, want to thank them for having me out there. It was a great talk, and it's always fun to educate about the LRC. Love to do it.
Absolutely. Speaking of educating, we'll be doing that when our guest arrives, and that will be after the break and back into our next segment. And that is Ian Hall. He is with AIGEN, A-I-G-E-N. And we're going to talk about robotics and AI and how that's actually already being used right here in the Red River Valley. We'll talk about the tech behind it, the story that they have as to how this happened, and they're helping to reduce labor costs and so much more. I've seen this in operation. The only way to really describe it is it looks like a coffee table with 4 legs that can walk all by itself. And it sort of followed me around at FarmCon, like in the lobby. I noticed it was everywhere. So I can't wait to find out more about it from Ian, and we'll do that after we pick up the markets from the American Ag Network, and we will be back. Welcome back to Weather and Ag in Focus. Thanks for being here. And to those of you who are thinking about changing your insurance needs, well, God needed a caretaker for his planned paradise, so he made a farmer who's also an insurance agent. Have a chat with Nate Thorsrud, owner and family farmer near Grandin, North Dakota. His insurance has roots right here in North Dakota, because he understands what farmers need, because he is one. So you can reach out to Nate, experience since 2004 in insurance for crop and hail. You can give him a call, JLA Insurance. Talk to Nate at 701-371-0311. Our guest today is Ian Hall. He is with AIGEN, and we want to talk about AI, robotics, and so much more. Ian, how are you? Please introduce yourself.
Hi, Bridget. I'm doing really well today. How are you?
Great. Thanks. So
good. Good.
What's your background?
Yeah. My background's professionally has been in production ag technology for the last 7 or 8 years, but I've kind of got a mixed background of entrepreneurship, a decade in the service industry before that, and then trying to figure out how to do on-farm technology as much as possible. So I got my college education at the University of Nebraska-Lincoln, studied ag econ, political science, and agronomy. Didn't really know what I wanted to do with that. So out of college, I rented a single acre from my grandma up at the family farm. Decided to grow watermelons and squash because I didn't know how to do the post-processing stuff. And those things are come with their own packaging, which was easy and nice. And then over that 4 years, I took that 1 acre. Me and my dad took that 1 acre and got it up to 7. We participated in direct-to-consumer produce sales, grocery stores, warehousing, wholesale, all that good stuff. And then COVID came around. And that all changed. And I thought one of the things that isn't going away anytime soon is commercial technology. But one of the big gaps that I saw on the farm in our neighborhood and then kind of across the country was on-farm technology adoption and then what it means in the future. So what does it look like to go from where we sat with technology in the late 2010s to where it's going to go in the next 20 years, and thought technology would be a really good place to go. So I got an internship with Farmers Edge right at a kind of that time frame. And then I started working for a company called GrainBridge, which was a joint venture between Cargill and ADM doing grain marketing software. And then we got acquired by Bushel up in Fargo. And I started doing that same or similar thing with the team at Bushel for the last 4 years. So really thinking about on-farm technology, what does it look like to have basically all of your farm finances, profit and loss in your pocket, and then how do we digitize those transactions? And then as of October, I've been working with AIGEN. So thinking about something completely different, completely new, but something I'm really excited to talk about today and hopefully bring to the market and help expand the market, which is edge AI and robotics, so that we can supplement or augment the need for large sprayers, tractors, and then labor crews as well.
I'm so glad you said AIGEN, because I realized I had been pronouncing that just a little bit wrong. So thank you, Ian. I appreciate that.
Yeah, no problem. Yeah, it's AI-generated technology is where that comes from. So,
thank you. That was going to be my next question. How do I need to remember that? Now I will.
Yeah.
And you've got this operating right up here in the Red River Valley. So how exactly did iGen decide this was a great test site? And talk to me about what you're really doing working up here.
Yeah, absolutely. So kind of the litmus test for any robotics in ag recently has been orchards, vineyards, and specialty crops. And so the founders of iGen decided that row crops is a bigger market. It has more herbicide usage and herbicide resistance. And then there's a ton more acres, right? So instead of centralizing the efforts of the company into, let's say, one or two valleys on the coast, getting into broad acre crops, corn, soybeans, those are really saturated markets with, you know, the embedded seed and crop protection companies. And so we thought it'd be a good idea to get into something that's more of a beachhead and not a whole front, which is the Red River Valley. So it's a really awesome place to work with innovative growers, a collaborative community, more of a high value crop, in sugar beets than it is in kind of broad acres, across the country. So, we identified the sugar beet, as a crop that needed help with, not only herbicide resistance, but alternatives of mode of action. And so putting the robot and the fleet of robots into fields where there are limited herbicides to begin with. And then the resistance to those herbicides that are available is high, seemed like a really good idea. And so our last season, we worked with three growers in the Red River Valley, covering a little bit over 400 acres, with a fleet of around 50 robots at any one time. We'll return with a second generation of our fleet this season, into those same three customers. And then we're looking to expand, into kind of an adjacent, market, which is soybeans in the near future. The Red River Valley, Cass County specifically, produces quite a few soybeans. And so it's a good next step to get from sugar beets to soybeans in the next couple years.
There really is. And when you talk about resistance, we have some active ingredients in the herbicide realm that do have resistance to them. It's not everything yet, but we want to prevent that. And so I see this as more of a preventative than a reactive situation. Because if we can do something differently on the front end, that prevents us from having disastrous situations on the back. Now, sugar beets make sense because of the rows. There's space in between the plants in order to get out there and do a nice job of handling that weed control. Sometimes soybeans aren't in rows. They're a little more solid seeded. Can your robot handle that type of a situation? Will it be able to identify the difference between what's a weed and what's a growing crop?
Yeah, that's the really cool part about all the edge compute and the AI that goes on with the what we call our perception units on the robot. So right now we are row based. So if you were to drill in like a 7.5-inch drill, I don't know if it would be the best way to look at weeding with a robot at the moment. But the way it works right now is basically any row spacing bigger than 15 inches and smaller than 60 inches, we can move any one of the three arms or all three of the arms into the area either between the rows or in the row in order to get to the weeds. And we use an onboard camera system to detect the weed versus the crop. We have a model that sits in the compute board on the robot that handles each arm independently. And then as we identify how many weeds there are, how big they are, and how close they are to the crop row and the plants within those rows, we can move the steel that's at the end of the arm to eliminate the weeds very precisely, as opposed to like a broad acre cultivator or even a hand labor crew would have to use kind of broad strokes to get in there. But we have really good crop detection techniques, weed detection techniques, and then we can decipher between the two and move the arm where it needs to go to detect to get the weed out before it gets too big or is too competitive with the crop.
Well, competitive is certainly going to take away from the yield, but before it's too big, that's a great point, because if you let something go, it's not exactly easy to get those out of there. I've had to use a little extra force, you might say, when pulling some weeds in a field. And we want to talk about that and so much more, and especially the adaptation rate that farmers are seeing right now with more AI and where that's going to go. So we're going to return and have this continued conversation with Ian Hall. He is with iGen, and we will do that after our bottom of the hour news, so stay tuned. Welcome back to Weather and Ag in Focus. Thanks for being here this afternoon. It's a great day to catch up on news and weather in agriculture, because here we are on the Super Bowl weekend eve, and you just never know what kind of fascinating tidbits you might need about how ag relates to the Super Bowl. And we're going to talk about robotics as well. Somehow, I don't think that our guest, Ian Hall's robotics with iGen, are going to have anything to do with playing football, though. I just feel like it's got a whole different purpose. So, Ian, when you think about farmers and changing what they do on a daily basis, we've gotten so much better. We use auto steer. We have things like, you know, John Deere ops and the command centers and our tractors and equipment. What about the robotics? What's the adaptation rate that farmers are using right now? Is it going pretty smoothly, or what might be some of the constraints?
Yeah, I think it's still really early, to say the least. We see a lot of prevalence in robotics on the coast. Vineyards, orchards, specialty crops see the bulk of the automation. And then when you start to see row crops in corn and beans, wheat, more of the broadacre crops, we're starting to see more of like the See and Spray technology, which is an adaptation into helping the existing sprayer technology be a little bit more efficient and effective. And then from an automation space, we start to see a lot of the drone technologies are inkling towards automation. Flying objects or even objects at high speed, like a Tesla self-driving car, isn't generally trusted safely quite yet. So it's still very early. So I don't want to put the cart before the horse, but I do think there is good reason to believe that automation will make a lot of farmers' lives easier in the next couple years. There's a couple guys doing some really interesting stuff in the agronomy world right now in terms of how do you make agronomic predictions a little bit more better. And that's something that we're aware of at iGen, but not something that we're focused on. So what we're really kind of focused on at the moment is just making a repetitive job of weeding against a sprayer or a drone automated completely. So instead of having a big sprayer that needs millions of dollars of capital cost to get into, or even you know, hundreds of dollars an acre in crop protection, we're just putting adequately sized fleets of robots into farmers' fields so that we can meet weeds in the soil with steel and automate that job as much as possible so that the farmer can do more valuable tasks that have a little bit more return than just sitting in the cab. And I think that's where a majority of the automation in broadacre crops are going to go in the next, I would say, 10 years.
We can see on the live stream pictures of the little robot. It's called Element. Yeah. And I wanted to go back to some of those photos. And Dean, maybe this is where your question was going to go. Talk about what this little thing looks like. And Addison, if you want to back up a photo, there's a great comparison shot of a full-size self-propelled sprayer going down the road. And next to it is this little Element robot out in the field. And what's kind of the difference between the two, Ian?
Yeah, definitely. So I'll start with the conventional sprayer classes, right? I think it's still predominant in the Red River Valley, but you have a pull behind sprayer, right? It's in a piece of equipment that attaches to a tractor so that you don't have to upgrade into the big sprayer. Once you get into the big sprayer, you know, you're looking at 60, 90, 120 foot booms, high horsepower, 1,000 gallon tanks. A lot of chemical needs to go into that thing all at one time. It goes down the road, probably at 20 some mile an hour, goes through the field at, 12, 14, 15 mile an hour. And it sprays a lot of area all at once, which is good for designing for one farmer being in one seat at one time to cover as many acres as possible. The big difference between the large ag equipment and where robotics and iGen come into play with Element here, if you go to the next slide, it might be helpful to look at these at a smaller scale, is being more autonomous with a fleet. So the common saying that we use at iGen is you don't care how many times the Roomba goes over your floor, you just care that the floor is clean. So what we have here is our Element robot. Dimensionally, it's 28 inches long, 60 inches wide, and 36 inches tall. It's got three arms on the back, a solar panel on the top. All the computers are all in the middle, and then it's got independent drive motors for each wheel. And then to put all that together, what that really accounts to is each one of these robots can cover 1.5 or 2.5 rows, depending on your wheels, on your row spacing at any one time. And they can cover somewhere in the neighborhood of 4 to 6 acres per day. And then a fleet of four of those could get through a quarter section, 160 acres, about in a week. So instead of spending the time of spraying one person in one very expensive machine with expensive chemicals at one time, we're hoping to reduce that capital cost of ownership and the per acre cost of weed control to comparable or somewhere in the neighborhood of what it would cost to own and run the sprayer without having to buy the chemicals every year, put someone in the seat and own the sprayer. So it's all solar powered. It's designed to live in the field. It's all wind, water, and weatherproof, really. 150 degrees of heat, 0 degree cold, 60 mile an hour wind. Went through a hailstorm last year. It got submerged in a puddle. Last spring was pretty wet. So we had a rising puddle that got to us and it sat in a puddle overnight. So nothing too crazy in terms of weather control. And so what we're really trying to figure out is, you know, how big does this thing need to be or how many need to be in the field? What are the mode of actions that our steel blades need to have in order to accommodate the species of weed, the density of weed, and the speed of movement to be in time to allow the crop to be more competitive than the weed and to keep those weeds really small until the canopy can close and we don't have to worry about weeds going to seed anymore.
And Ian, I mean, technology has come around so fast in the last 10 years. And I know you hit on a few things. You want to make it a little more cost effective for our farmers as well. Where do you see this going 10 years? I mean, look at the advancement we've had already in the last 10 years. Where do you see this in 10 years from now?
Yeah, great question. So I'll give you a perspective on where my head was at 10 years ago with this. We started, AutoSteer has been around for, I don't know, probably my whole life, I would say. But 10 years ago, there was...
Most of the equipment started seeing AutoSteer pretty predominantly about 18 to 20 years ago.
Yeah, so the majority of my life. And so 10 years ago, right, we go from, you know, Minneapolis Moline tractors in the 30s and 40s, 50s, up into the modern kind of designs of tractors in the 90s, 2000s. And then we get into AutoSteer, and that's awesome. And so in the middle of the 2010s, we started to see retrofit technology for RTK and visually guided smaller series of tractors. So on our family farm, I was trying to convince my family that we should get a retrofit for our 4020 and put that into play so that we could have one tractor always doing something, whether it was, you know, night or it was the farthest field away from the shop, right? And so that 10 years ago was a $25,000 retrofit cost. And now in 10 years, I see kind of that same progression away from individual tractors, but automated machines that do the job for you. So every job that's vital for a farm to be productive, you know, we think about weeding, planting, fertilizing, irrigating, probably not so much, and then probably not harvest quite yet. But in my book of dreams, you know, in 10 years, I would love to be able to see either one suite or one piece of equipment or many pieces of equipment combined together to be able to automatically detect and control weeds, plant precisely, and then fertilize in time at the right rates based on in-field conditions using IoT devices to make the right application of the right amount of seed and fertilizer so that we can optimally use the dollar that the farmer is either borrowing or has to make a optimal return on that investment. A lot of farmers put in a lot of capital cost into high rates of ownership. And I see, as opposed to one of those machines being prevalent on the farm, I would like to start seeing, you know, 10, 15, 20 of these smaller platforms that are designed to do one job specifically, do them when they need to be done and very precisely so that we don't have a lot of waste.
I see what you're doing with all, I'm watching the video as well, and I'm seeing what some of these tools look like. And if we can back up, there was a video or a photo there of the row of the field, and it had little green boxes around the plants that should be staying. You can tell that that's the plant you want, and little red boxes about the, around the ones that you don't want there. And that's literally what your element sees in the field, correct?
Yeah, that is exactly right. It uses what's called edge AI. So it does all the computing on board of the robot while it's moving through the field. It detects where the weeds are. It detects where the crops are. And then it actuates the arms on the back to put the steel into the soil and remove the unwanted plants that we call weeds. So very low latency. It moves rather quickly in the field. It can detect millions of objects every second, and then it can decipher what needs to happen based on that. And so we're collecting the data, and then we're doing something with the data, which has kind of been one of technology's downsides for the last few years, is we have all this data, but what do we do with it? And we're putting that into motion, being able to detect what it is, understand what it is, and then do something with it in real time, all on board this nifty little robot.
What's the lifespan on that robot? Because you said it could literally live at the field. It can live through all weather. And so after it's charged itself or so forth, it can take off again. How long can it actually process without having to have replacement parts, that type of thing? And what if it's muddy? Does it get stuck?
Yeah, I'll start with the muddy part first because I think that's very applicable to the Red River Valley. It weighs 130 pounds and it's got independent drive motors on each one of those wheels. So it glides over the top of the mud. Last year being a really wet spring, we stayed out of the field until we knew we were okay. We do see a little bit of mud buildup on the tires as it gets wetter and wetter. But from a comparative standpoint to a sprayer or a planter, or a tractor in general, you're going to be able to get in the field a lot sooner. So that's an advantage for sure. Mm-hmm. And then the lifespan of all the parts that we have on board right now, when the units go out to the farm, we expect them to last for 8 to 10 years. So everything's top of the line, high quality, sourced in the U.S. if we can. Otherwise, we 3D print the plastic parts. And we make sure that everything's made of really high quality materials so that the product that we're putting into the market is reliable and it's, you know, able to live in that field for as long as that season can exist. Do I think the equipment should live kind of in the woodrow like a lot of old equipment does on the farm? No. It's got electronics in it, so freezing temperatures are going to be bad. The batteries on it aren't going to love negative 40 degree North Dakota winters. But as long as the plants are in the field, I think there's a really good reason to believe that the robot can be in the field with the plants.
True. And what's the height restriction? Because I see it right now on video. For those who are watching the live stream on Facebook, YouTube, and Acres TV, you can see Element out in the field. Those sugar beets look like they're probably 5 to 6 leaf. So what's the height that of maximization before Element is having trouble getting through the field because the plants are too big?
Yep. So in this picture specifically, those are just about 24 to 26 inches tall. And we knew that would kind of be our end of season for us, which is fine. The clearance that we have on the Gen 1 robot right here allows us to get into sugar beets for canopy closure, which is roughly 45 days after emergence, which is great. After that, weed pressure is usually pretty low, especially if you can stay on top of them and you don't have many of them going to seed. We're coming out with a Gen 2 model this season with another foot of clearance, another foot of width, and adding a third arm. So we will have the ability to stay in the field a little bit longer. But we do know that once crops get to canopy, that is usually a good sign for weed competition with the crop. The one plant that you can't really compete with in terms of height is corn. So that's still an unknown, but we do feel confident with crops like soybeans, sugar beets, and cotton that we can stay in the field for roughly 40 to 50 days to make sure that we have clearance. We can see the weeds at the bottom of the seed bed, and then we can actually move the arms in there without damaging the crop.
When you think about this little machine being out in the field for farmers to use, you mentioned you have three that are already on board and giving it a try. Do you anticipate that they will expand their acres with it this year, or will there be more farmers who have stepped up and said, I'd like to try this in some of my acres?
Yeah, the farmer sentiment in the Red River Valley has been really productive so far. The three farmers that we were with last year have signed up for another season. So that's awesome traction for us. We're going to be giving them the Gen 2 model that we're coming out with this spring. It should be a little bit more productive for them. And we're also introducing a new mode of action. So in high density weeds, striking at weeds isn't necessarily the best idea. So we're introducing a sweeping motion. So imagine one of those arms going in between each row early in the season to compete with small weeds that are high in density. And then as those weeds get bigger, striking at them in kind of like a more classic hand weeding technique. And I do think the acreage will increase. The dilemma at the moment is cost and return, right? So the fewer robots we build, the more expensive they are. And kind of those classic supply chain type issues, the more that we can build, the cheaper that we can get. And we all know farmers are cost minimizers. So being able to say, you know, we can do this on par with what you're used to paying is going to certainly be a benefit for us. But there are quite a few farmers that are willing to go be early adopters of this technology. We see people all the way from, you know, small farms in the eastern coast and then big farms all the way on the west coast and everything you can imagine in the middle reaching out to us saying, hey, we've got a problem with weeds. We don't love what we're doing with chemicals or hand labor, and we would like to try something new, and we're willing to pay more for it. So I do think it's a, like I said, early in the technology adoption cycle, but I do think it's addressing a problem that does have problems, and we should see acres increase as long as we can make sure those weeds are getting out of the field.
All right. Neem, we have a caller on line one. Tom, you've got a question for our guest.
Yes, and this, I apologize if this question's been asked and answered already, but is this is the machine controlled by an app or GPS?
Hey, Tom, great question. We use a little bit of both. So we start every season with a base layer of the field, and then the planter, if you have an RTK map from your planter, we can throw that on top of the base layer of the field. And then as the robot goes through the field itself, it knows how to navigate between the rows. And so when the robot is in the field, it's fully autonomous. And if there is any need for alerting or monitoring, we do have an app that lets you view it or manage it from around the world. So we can have robot operators at our Washington office clue into what's going on in the Red River Valley and provide real-time look and see and act on everything that's going on in the field. So we've got those bases covered with automation and oversight.
So does what do you do with app updates? Would that affect the little robot, or does that sometimes apps can kind of glitch? I'm not saying they ever do, but I'm just saying they sometimes can. So what happens then?
Fully autonomous. So the robot doesn't need the app to function. It's just more of the oversight part of thing. And the real-time navigation system allows it to work in the field. Kind of the caveat to that, though, would be being able to put in each mission is what we call it on a daily basis. So tasking out the job of the robot's going to cover this much space per day, and then it'll go and do that job. And when it's done, it'll return back to its home base and no operator interference or no operator needs to kind of look into that unless something is noticed and observed.
Okay. Thank you very much.
Good questions, Tom. Good questions. Thank you. Yeah, it's come so long. I mean, it's come such a far away from, like you said, you know, just 10 years ago. And it's really going to be interesting to see the next 10 years, especially if it's more cost effective for our ag community as well.
Yeah, absolutely. I think that's the cost driver is usually the decision maker for most farms, and being able to make sure that we're cost competitive is definitely where we want to be. But, you know, freeing up time is also valuable, too. I know a lot of the sentiment that we've gotten from the farmers in the area is, hey, I want to be able to go to my kid's baseball game, or my wife wants me an hour out of the day to be able to come home during planting and spraying season. So there's a lot to look forward to in automation and robotics and ag, that's for sure.
Absolutely. And efficiency and dollar figures matter the most. So thank you. Ian, really glad you were able to join us today. Thanks for your time.
Yeah, thanks for having me. Appreciate the time.
Thanks, Ian.
Awesome. Stay tuned, folks. We got to touch on that weekend weather because it's looking like it's going to get a lot more windy. Talk in a moment.
All right. Welcome back to Weather and Ag in Focus. We got about 30 seconds to recap you on the weather here real quick. The 94 corridor that does include Fargo all the way out through Bismarck is under a winter weather advisory. South of that, winter storm warnings in effect all the way from the southeastern corner of the state all the way out south of Bismarck. So if you're doing any traveling later this afternoon and tonight, please be aware of that. So for Bridget, myself, I want to thank everybody for this afternoon, the Jay Thomas Show. It's coming up next.